It's 12 Enough, Season 10, Episode 5A, with your host, Jonathan Malone, and guest host, Josh Mancini. Twelve Enough is a podcast about Christian faith and culture in the modern age. Your host, Jonathan Malone, is the pastor of the First Baptist Church of East Greenwich, Rhode Island. Josh Mancini is the pastor of the Church of the City in Providence, Rhode Island. This podcast is brought to you by Natural, Organic, Drug-Free, Homegrown Theology. It's going to cost you a lot of money. You're not going to get a big portion, but when you hear this little bit of wisdom, when you get a taste of what it has to offer, you're going to be amazed. Or at least say you are, because you spent so much money. And we're back. So this is the second part of the conversation I had with Josh Mancini. But before we get to that, I want to just share an announcement, and I'm going to share more of these. But these are for those who subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Thank you so much for doing that. It means a lot to me. It really does. I go to sleep every night, and I think, you know, people have subscribed to this podcast through iTunes, and a smile comes across my face. You make me smile. Huh. Well, you need to resubscribe. I am going to be changing platforms. So the one platform that I use that gives all the information to iTunes, I'm going to be ending with them in May. So you need to find the new 12 Enough podcast. And here's the difference. Here's how you know the difference. The old 12 Enough has a lowercase t and a lowercase e. The new 12 Enough has an uppercase t and uppercase e. So just look for that. Otherwise, it's exactly the same. It just makes my life a little bit easier. It's going to save me a little more money, and that's always helpful. Otherwise, we're going to have to start getting real sponsors. And boy, you don't want that, because the people that have been offering have just been, well, let's not get into that. So please look for, please subscribe to the new 12 Enough. And this means if we have to start from scratch with ratings, rate the show, and make a comment on the show. All right, all that business is aside. Now, the conversation I had with Josh Mancini, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed Josh. He throws out these things in there that I have such a hard time agreeing with, and I love that about him. And then other things that I say, yeah, I'm right there with you. So this one is about legalism. When is something a sin, and when is it just a legalistic following of something else? I mean, there's probably more hierarchy to that, but we don't want to get into that. We just look at, when is it okay to smoke marijuana? And when are you getting in the way of your relationship with Christ when you smoke marijuana? I hope you enjoyed this conversation and know that there were no drugs used in the making of this podcast. And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But let's, why don't you kind
of... Should I like share the history of how it evolved into what it is now?
Yeah.
Okay. So it started off by a buddy of mine, actually, a pastor here in Rhode Island, is, he's a teetotaler,
Which means he
measures out... Yeah, he
measures
out all of his tea.
Totals the tea.
Yes. No, he does not touch alcohol at all.
He doesn't touch it?
At all.
Wow.
At all.
Rubbing alcohol?
He might touch rubbing alcohol. Okay, yeah. He doesn't touch any kind of consumable alcohol. If okay. You will. Well, I guess rubbing alcohol is consumable. Because everything's consumable.
You're that desperate.
But
he doesn't drink.
He doesn't drink, right. He doesn't drink anything. He doesn't drink. Even like the communion wine is grape juice.
Okay.
Like he goes that far.
Okay.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
I have no issue with that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I'm not. That's really all I can... I mean, I was going to go to the opposite end,
right.
but the opposite end's a drunkard, and yeah. I'm not a drunkard. But I'm not a teetotaler. I have the occasional beer, occasional wine.
You and I had limoncello on
Christmas
Eve.
Yeah. And like even like wine, like we serve wine in the communion, so every week I'm having wine at least.
Oh, okay, good.
It's watered down, and you know, it's communion. It's holy wine.
So do you add water to your communion wine?
Yes.
Wow, you are Catholic. Or Episcopalian.
Jesus gets stabbed and blood and water comes out.
That's why the Catholics do it.
That's why I do it. Okay. You know, so it was a tough decision. Anyways.
Yeah, we won't get into how you were secretly introducing transubstantiation to your folks. We won't get into that.
I mutter a secret Latin phrase. Okay. Jacob's so offended right now. Anyways.
So you don't total the tea.
Right, I don't total the tea. I'm not a drunkard, but right. I'm not anti.
You seem sober right now.
I am, okay, for the most part.
For the most part.
You know, for the most part.
You can only be so much.
Yeah, you can only be so sober-minded. Mm-hmm. As my wife would say, I'm permanently burnt. So
nice.
Yeah, so I'm, okay. No matter what, I'm already past it anyways. But, so, you know, we talked about this, and I realized this would be a good podcast discussion about alcohol versus non-alcohol. Then it evolved into, really, the issue isn't alcohol versus non-alcohol. The issue is... the law versus grace, and how far is too far, and then it became almost caricatures into antinomianism and legalism.
So antinomianism is a wonderful word.
Yes.
My understanding is it's just not holding to a law.
Right, no law.
Yeah.
Which is what it literally means.
Yeah, that's what wanted to...
Yeah, so people...
Why do we say antinomianism versus legalism and not antinomianism versus nomianism?
Well, I'm sure at one point we said nomianism.
But then we got...
Then we translated to English. We translated it into legalism.
We don't say English. Non-legalistic versus legalistic.
Right, because non-legalistic would be just anybody who isn't legalistic.
Right.
Right.
But antinomianism is a more definite stance of saying...
Right, so antinomianism... Because it's not just being anti-legalistic, it's being anti-law.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So just no law. And you see people like that...
It's like the Wild West of religion.
Right. Well, that's Jude. Jude says that there will be people who twist grace, if you will.
Right. This is Jude from the Bible.
Jude from the Bible. Not...
Right. Not Hey Jude.
Not Hey Jude. Not the Beatles song. But so you have those two stances. And then me and Jonathan met, and I think we met in November, and marijuana had just become legal in Massachusetts.
Right.
Which means it's going to become legal in Rhode Island.
Eventually.
It will. I mean, anybody who's like still like, no, it's not. Marijuana's evil.
Right.
You lost.
Yeah, it's done. It's done.
We're already medical. Yeah.
Gays are getting married.
Yeah.
Marijuana's going to be legal.
Right. The two worst things for the evangelical church.
Yep.
Not people going to hell. Not anything like that. No. It's the gays and the pot.
And the pot. I don't know what they're going to get angry about now.
They haven't given up any of their issues that have been falling for the past 50 years. They're not quitting.
That's true. They're still pushing.
For the record, I come from an evangelical background, so
some of them are still pushing segregation. So we still have that.
So that's how it kind of evolved. Right. So I guess the focus is marijuana.
Yeah.
But really, it's this is how I explain it to my church: is what's the line?
Right.
You know, where's the line in marijuana? Because if you go too far, if you go too far on either line, you end up with legalism or antinomianism. You know, if you have people just coming completely stoned out of their mind to church, and you're stoned out of your mind, and, you know, that you might be antinomian. And if you say, absolutely not, doesn't matter if it's medicinally good or not, you can't even come in our church, you might be legalistic.
So. I mean, there's a question there about one's character. And excess. Mm-hmm. So you could say excess in anything would be too much.
Right.
Even like excess in prayer.
Right.
You know, if all you do is pray all the time, like all the time.
Right.
And to the detriment of your relationships with your family, your friends, whatever, then you say, all right, you need to tone it down.
Right. Bob Dylan, are you so heavenly minded that you're no earthly good?
Oh, that's right. Bob Dylan did write that, didn't he?
Yeah.
Huh. That was a good call.
Yeah. Oh, I listened to a lot of Bob Dylan Christian at one point.
It was your way of trying to stay hip.
It was my way of transitioning from complete secular music into Christian music. That's the third tenet of evangelicalism. Oh. No secular music.
I just can't.
No Queen. No Bob Dylan.
I can't do. It's funny when my kids and I listen to the radio and we're just like flipping through.
And Caleb comes on.
Yeah, and we say, you know how you know it's Christian music? You can understand the words. because everyone else, it's about the melodies.
Yeah.
It's not so much about the words. Anyway, but that's neither here nor there. So that idea of excess, you could say it's not a legalistic approach. It's more of a development of one's virtues.
Right. Right.
Right? So,
right.
So you could say, just don't be excessive.
Right. Yeah, you can argue don't be excessive. It really depends on where you, or what we're talking about.
Right.
Because, like you said, it could be prayer. It could be literally anything.
Yeah.
But we have to almost apply the same standard, I believe, to everything.
Right. Well, here's the thing, because some things you could say, you know, something you could say, you can do it, just don't do it excess, and others, if you do it at all, it's a sin.
Right, okay, yeah.
And that's where the legalism really starts to come in.
So we have to first define sin, I guess, and what it is. So what is sin? Rebellion to God.
Yeah.
And so there's commandments that we have to follow. So if you go around...
Wait. There's commandments?
There's commandments.
How many?
Jesus said there was 10, but the Jewish people have 612, so...
What did Jesus say that
Jesus
there's
said there
10
were two.
Commandments?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Moses brought 10. You know, this is what I get for not using my notes. No, I didn't have notes about that question.
Jesus didn't say there's 10.
Moses brought 10. God had 10.
There's two commandments.
Jesus said there were two.
And then
that'll fulfill the other 8.
Yeah, and then there's 612 other.
Right, right. I was trying to be like so clever by throwing that 612 out there, and I completely botched the words of Jesus.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to edit it out.
No, don't. Please.
No, please.
Please keep that in there.
Yeah, so we have the Ten Commandments and maybe 612.
We have 2, 10, and 612.
Yeah.
So those three sections. Now, 612 I'm not going into because that's legalism. And that's really... If you want a biblical example of legalism, look at Leviticus.
Right, right.
Not that it's not God's word. I think it's God's word. But a lot of those laws are created to keep the Jewish people away from the Ten Commandments. It's for even breaking them. But then you create a situation where eating lobster is a sin.
Right. I mean, there are ways to eat lobster that are sinful.
Right. There's definitely... sure.
All that butter, this is just sinful.
You know,
still doing it anyways.
Whether that's gluttony or,
right.
in a motel room.
And some of those laws are also to help the Jews maintain an identity.
Right.
Separate
right.
from others. You know, it's to say, this is who we are. This is how we know ourselves.
Right. Well, eating lobster, you know,
1,500
years ago, or 1,500, 2,000 years ago, 2,500 years ago, even 3,000 years ago, would have been horrible because they didn't have the proper ways of cleaning it. They didn't have the proper ways of doing anything. That's why eating pig was bad.
And they didn't have the bibs.
Yeah. They didn't have the bibs.
They didn't have the bibs. How can you eat lobster without bibs? Yeah, you can't eat the lobster without the bib.
You need the bib.
You need the bib.
They didn't know how to do the melted butter just right.
Right.
So that's why it's not a sin anymore, because we can do the melted butter.
We have evolved.
Right, we have evolved. But yeah, no, you're right. And there was aspects that were hygienical too.
Right.
I mean, there's even like
safety.
Like things. Well, like circumcision. Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but...
There are hygienic...
Right, there's hygienic purposes, but even like for the female, there's reasons for the male to be circumcised.
Okay.
So cervical cancer is found less in Jewish woman than it is a Gentile woman.
Okay.
That was a study done in like the 60s.
Okay.
So, you know, and it was in support of circumcision.
Right.
And that's
right.
how they showed it.
Right.
So there was obviously other benefits too, but really the 612 or the 602 extra laws were there to establish this boundary around the Ten Commandments. So you couldn't even come close, but it became... After the 612, more were added by the...
Right. Midrash would...
Yeah, the Midrash would add more, and the rabbis would add more, and next thing you know, there's all these different laws you have to follow, and it becomes this thing of following the straight and narrow, but the straight and narrow was defined by the rabbis, not defined by God.
So evangelicals, Baptists specifically, but evangelicals in general have their own kind of Midrash.
Absolutely.
And so let's go with drinking... With alcohol as you know, as a case study.
Right, that's a good starting point.
Yes.
So I'll give my background. I was I went to an Assemblies of God school, an Assemblies of God Pentecostal background.
What was your mascot?
We didn't have one.
You didn't have a mascot?
No, we had one sporting team, and it was the at the time the school was called Zion Bible College. It changed over to North Point. It was called the Zion Lions. That was their... I don't know if that was our school mascot.
Okay, I'm gonna give you a mascot.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Flamers.
Yeah. Sure.
You're Pentecostals, right?
Chandelier swingers. If you are listening and you are associated with North Point Bible College, please understand, I love that school.
Yeah, North
and
Point,
I'm joking.
North Point Bible College, home of the Flamers.
That's great.
Sorry, you're making a point. So you went to this school.
Oh, so I'm going to an Assemblies of God school. And
right.
Now, I had just come out of the military.
Yep.
I was 21.
Military, which is known for the lifestyle of straight and narrow.
Yeah, right. Anyways, I learned more about how to sin in the military than I did outside of the military.
But how to do it in a regimented way.
Right. How to do it without getting caught. How to be drunk while standing at parade rest. That's what I learned.
That's a skill.
It is. How to sleep at parade rest is a skill too. Mm-hmm. But so I get out and I'm 21 and I'm excited. I'm going to Bible college. I feel like this is my call.
Yeah.
And I get there and the first thing they do is make me sign this rule book.
A rule book? Not yeah. even like a statement of faith or a contract? No,
well, in the rule book was a statement of faith okay. and all that other stuff as well. And in the rule book, though, it was like the big thing that had to be followed that I had the biggest issue with was alcohol use.
Oh.
You weren't allowed to look at it, essentially.
Wow.
And now, at the time, you know, I just figured, okay, this is for the younger kids. Because it's a college right. campus, 18, right. 19, 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
Not me.
Right.
No, I'm 21. I can drink legally.
Yeah, you can drink legally. So you signed it, but thinking, clearly whatever. It doesn't really mean me because right. I'm of age and I have an experience. My prefrontal cortex is a little more fully formed,
right,
so I
right.
can make more rational decisions. Right. All that's going through your head when you sign it.
Right.
So you did a nice little hermeneutical twist and saying, I'm signing it, but we all know.
Right, that exactly. That was my thought process. Until it's actually talked about. They did a big assembly about the rules.
Really?
And they focused on alcohol use and said, absolutely not. It's against the Assemblies of God to drink alcohol.
Assemblies of God, for folks that don't know, is a denomination.
Yes.
It's not like a group of people that are assembled.
It's a voluntary God. Fellowship, according to them. It's
yeah,
not,
okay,
a,
good.
Yeah.
Good
no, enough. It's a denomination.
So according to them, they
according
say,
to them, you could not...
could not drink.
Could not drink. It was one of their standards of being a minister, but beyond that was a standard of even being a member of an AG church.
Right.
So like for the lay person... They couldn't drink.
When they did this assembly, did they show you how to say no to alcohol?
No, unfortunately.
Okay,
the only thing they showed us is how to not text while driving.
That seems kind of self.
Yeah, no, they showed us a video of
okay.
of a person like head getting smashed over the window, and I'm like,
wow.
And then they're like, don't text and don't while driving and don't drink, and I'm like.
It was a video from 1985?
It was like, no, they were texting.
But you know that, but you know that video from 85 that they always showed in driver's ed classes?
No, I didn't take driver's ed.
Murder on the Highway or something like that. That's
fantastic. I'll check it out later.
So at Oberlin, we had an assembly at the beginning of our school year there too for all the first year students. But that involved a banana and methods for safe sex.
Right, right.
And
right.
lots of demonstration.
See, now, I hope my wife is listening because she didn't believe me that this was a real thing. I learned it in fifth grade, so.
Oh, okay.
You not take, an appropriate place
first,
to learn it.
You take the banana.
Yeah.
Then anyway.
So it was this big thing. So it was absolutely no drinking. So as I looked into it,
mm-hmm.
it came from the holiness movement.
Yes.
Which spun off from Methodist.
Yep.
And then even there are some Methodist churches still, or denominations that hold no drinking. So it becomes a rule
mm-hmm.
for the congregation, for everybody to even avoid drunkenness,
yep.
you will avoid all alcohol.
So with the Baptists, you know, every church I've served in, we have a rule where we do not have alcohol on the premises.
Hmm.
And they've been very clear about that. And every church I've served in, there's always this, when I've been interviewing, there's always this uncomfortable moment when they say, so what's your feeling on alcohol? And, you know, waiting for me to answer and assuming I'm going to say, like, well, of course it's wrong. And I say, well, you know, I enjoy a drink. And then you see this collective sigh, like, okay, good, phew. And then they all bring out their flasks and their kegs. And you're like, all right, well, let's get started now. But
somebody's doing a keg stand in the interview.
I know, right? I mean, but Southern Baptists are more notorious for having this stance of
yes.
no alcohol. American Baptist as well. It's a part of our history. It comes out of a similar place as the holiness movement. With the temperance movement.
Yes.
And I think for good reasons. So folks, get your history right. You know, alcoholism continues to be a serious problem.
Yes.
First of all.
That's, 100%.
Yeah. And so it's something that should never be taken lightly, especially around college campuses, because binge drinking is a very serious problem. There was a time in our country when it was detrimentally serious to families.
Mm-hmm.
On a much broader level than it is now. It still is, but
yes.
you know, and what was happening was, you know, husbands would be spending their days in the bars or going home from work and going to the bar, and all the money they'd earn gone to alcohol, or they would beat their wives and their children, and the women had no recourse.
Mm-hmm.
It was not so easy just to leave or to call the cops or anything. The church became a place where they found a voice. And where they found a voice where they could say, we've got to stop this. And like I said, drunkenness led to just don't drink.
Right.
You know, and then the Welch family heard about it, and they said, we've got a solution for you. And now we all use Welch's grape juice.
Yep, that's how they did it.
That's pretty much
how it is. Yeah. It's great.
So that rule about don't drink, I think, comes out of a good moment. And there's a similarity to those 612 or 602 rules from Leviticus of Christians saying, we are going to be different.
Yes.
We're going to be a people that says what's happening with drinking, with alcohol, is evil.
Right. Right.
Is harmful, is dangerous. And so we've got to, you know, take a different kind of stand, witness of how we are different. And so this rule emerged. The rule became a law. Now we're already starting to make these wonderful distinctions between rules and laws. The rule became a law, and it became, and that law became, if alcohol touches your lips, it's a sin.
Right. Right, and that's one of the big things about the assemblies.
Right.
And they even have, I don't know if the American Baptists are similar, but they have this thing where they say, well, there's three different types of sins. There's corporate sins that churches can do.
Okay.
There's personal sins.
Yep, those are the fun ones.
Right, and then there's communal sins.
How's that different from corporate sins?
Because the communal sins are sins that that have been put in place not by God. So corporate and personal are God's sins.
Oh, okay. God.
Communal sins are
dictated
standards set by the community that we've broken, and thus we have sinned.
You know, American Baptists are not that organized to be able to even agree on
one rule.
On together. One, like sin. Yeah. First of all,
but and you're right. It did come out of a good place.
Yeah.
When it was a rule, when it was a standard of okay, this is where we should go.
Right.
And even like, you know what, I don't even have an issue with, hey, you know what, if you're a minister, you shouldn't drink. Right. I don't have an issue with that if that's your communal standard,
right.
Especially if you come out of, if you came out of this whole movement that of temperance, where it was the reality was there were drunks, you know,
right.
and in that culture, you need to stand out,
yeah.
But at the same time, we also have to be sensitive to our culture.
Let's go back to what do you think? Let's see if we can come up with something that is without a doubt a sin.
Okay.
That, you know, categorically we could say is a sin. Is there anything?
Drunkenness. Oh, there's so many scriptures that say it. 1 Corinthians 6, 9 and 10.
Wow.
Puts that whole thing in there. Drunkenness, lying, thievery.
But if you just drunk once.
No, that's so okay. If I just steal once, it's still a sin.
Okay. I was going more for worshiping idols.
Oh, you were going like the big...
Or taking the Lord's name.
You were going big corporate ones.
Yeah, I was
going
to say... Let's.
Yeah, I was sticking to the topic.
No, oh, okay. No, well, because I want to push this idea of what is, you know, of sin.
Right.
Especially as dictated...
Right. So, well, yeah, then... that's the Ten Commandments, any of them.
Yeah, really. Let's say take... Well, even thou shalt not kill is a tough one to work with, because if you're in
If you go into... Well, not even just that. If you go into Jesus' New Testament...
Yeah.
I was going to say twist, but that's not the right word. Interpretation.
Yeah.
Then if you just, you know, somebody passes by you and, you know, they
you think murderous thoughts.
Right. You just, you know, they cut you off and then you hate them for a moment.
So let's say taking the Lord's name in vain.
That's an easy one.
Yeah.
That's an easy one to get behind. I don't take the Lord's name in vain. So
you know what? It's actually, yeah. I'm comfortable with people swearing around me.
I'm not comfortable with that, though.
Okay. Well, I mean just cursing. Just,
yeah, no, I'm comfortable with the F-bombs,
with cuss
words, whatever.
Yeah, stuff like that. But yeah, it's when they drop... They say the take the Lord's name in vain when they say GD. I'm uncomfortable saying
it. Yeah, that's
it,
what I'm uncomfortable with.
And
yeah.
When they say it, then I flinch. I usually just like visually flinch. And that, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with having that kind of reaction.
You should. You should. And just to get a little off topic, as Christians, that should offend it. Just when somebody uses Jesus' name in vain.
Right.
I mean, like, I can't even say how they say it.
Yeah.
You know, right now I'm thinking it and I'm like, I don't even want to say it. I don't want to say the Lord's full name right now. Well, you know, his Greek name, I guess.
Jesu Christe?
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah. his last name wasn't Christ.
What? But... Wait, what? I've been sending all these letters to Mr. Christ come Jesus. And you're telling me he didn't get them?
No. That was not his birth name, I guess.
There's someone in San Diego that's just like, another letter? Jesus Christos!
But yeah, no, it should offend us. I mean,
it should.
100%, but most of the time we don't. We kind of, I feel like, we get offended more about the F word in the church than we do about the Lord's name in vain.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's almost a backwards mentality to me.
So let's say, we could say for sure, you know, saying, using the Lord's name in
vain. Yes, 100%. is a sin.
Is a sin.
Hardline sin.
It gets in the way of our relationship with God. It's a breaking of our relationship with God. And even when other people do it, it impacts our relationship with them and with God.
Or it should.
So that's there. So, you know, we could say categorically, like, you know, it's hard for us to think of an example of when the Lord's name is taken in vain, and we could like, well, yeah. It's hard to think, except for like when people write it into plays and stuff like that. But that's different.
History of the World Part One.
But those are, you know, anytime profanity is used in on the stage or in the movies, I understand it as trying to convey a nature of the character.
Right.
Right. So now there's other things that we could say, but maybe, so let's say even the Ten Commandments of thou shalt not kill.
Right.
What if you're defending yourself?
Right, and that comes into even the Midrash. You know, the Midrash talks about this, but as do other interpreters, is it okay for me to kill somebody if they step on my property and try to harm my wife, me, whatever?
Right.
Is it okay for me to kill somebody if it prevents them from killing? Like, if I go back in time, can I kill Hitler as a youth?
Right, right.
You know, as a 20-year-old man in, you know, wherever he was. I think he was in prison at the time, or wherever he was.
Why don't you go back earlier and just kill him as when he was a baby?
Just have an abortion
of Hitler. Well, that's a sin. See, the evangelicals painting themselves in a corner with that one. They didn't think it through. They should have thought it through.
Should have thought that one through.
So let's go right to the drinking now.
Right.
Because we've already kind of said, having a drink is not a sin.
Right. Having one drink, I don't think, is a sin.
Maybe two drinks.
Yeah.
Maybe three.
I say like this. What's your line? If you don't mind sharing it, what's your limit?
For me?
Yeah.
I can have two beers and still, and I'll have a little buzz, but I won't be drunk.
Right.
Three beers, I'm starting to head down to the drunken path.
So you know your limit's two to three.
Yeah.
Right. So you won't go past three?
So here's the thing. If I'm drinking, if I know I'm going past that line, I am aware of the circumstances and the situation.
Right.
So there are times if I'm at a conference,
yep,
and I have a hotel room, mm-hmm, I know I don't have to drive.
Yeah.
I don't have to preach. I know I'm not going to get called from any of my parishioners. Like, I know all this, you know, and there's people around me who are also going to, I know, will keep me accountable. Mm-hmm. Then I'll keep drinking, you know, up to a point. There is still a point when I feel like, okay, I need to stop.
Right.
When I feel like, all right, I'm getting close to the spins. Mm. Then I'm like, all right, start bringing the water.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so there still has to be the sense of I'm not losing control. Now, that's part of who I am. I'm not an alcoholic.
Right. Right. And then you know your line, though.
So, very clear in my mind.
With alcohol, because I'm asking the same question in a second.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with me. I know my line. I know.
Right.
I'm larger than you. For those who are wondering, I'm 300 pounds. Jonathan's like, what, 160, 170?
Yeah, but 160, 170.
So,
yeah.
You know, I can drink a little bit more than Jonathan. Not to brag. No. But I know my line is four beers. Mm. You know, I know I could sit there. I tell my wife all the time, she says, absolutely not. She lets me get one or two, and that's it.
Right.
But I know my line is four beers, and I know that line.
Yeah.
You know, I know once I hit after four beers, it's probably not good. You know, and it's going to lead more. So I stick to four or under, and I love my wife for saying no, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I love that accountability right there off the bat.
Yeah.
But with that being said, I know that line.
Yeah.
If you don't know that line, you're line zero.
Right.
And I'm not saying to a young, like, 18-year-old that might be listening, because
they got
to
find the line.
You know, that's a little, that might be a little different, where if you're not raised in a house of alcohol,
then
maybe your line's still zero.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't know where your line could be.
And then finding a safe place to try to figure that
out. Right, right. But if you're somebody that's listening to this, that maybe you struggle with alcohol before, or maybe you struggle with something else, and you don't know your line might be zero. And maybe it should stay there.
Yeah.
And not that it would be sinful for you to have one.
Right, right.
But why even test that line?
What if you're under 21?
And that's where, you know, that's where that safe place comes in. Or unless you mean, what if you're under 21 and drinking?
Is it a sin? If you're under 21...
In the United States.
In the United States.
Yes. Only because breaking the laws of the land, there's like a big... There's a big thing about, in Romans, you know, respect the authorities. Whether it's a sin and that's going to send you to hell.
Sins won't send you to hell?
Well, I think we use the word sin wrong sometimes. I think we use it to encompass it. And to say, I think it's a sin because you're breaking... It's a sin because you're going against God, because you're going against the laws God has placed. In the sense that... Romans 13, God has placed all authority here, and respect that authority, okay, et cetera, et cetera.
I would push back a little bit on that, because I think, because there's always, there are unjust laws.
Right. And that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
And the other hand, you know, it was illegal to be a Christian during the Roman Empire.
Right.
But Paul was still a Christian.
Yeah, boy, there's a,
you know, a loop. So here. I think it kind of depends on, will this law, does this law disturb your faith?
I would go even further to say, is this an unjust law?
Right. Well, drinking under 21, I don't think is an unjust law.
Right. We don't have, that's not breaking anyone's civil rights.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Now, I would say for those, there is that question, you know, so not unjust, but for those who are in the military, mm-hmm, who are 19 or 20, and they go and see...
They're drinking anyways.
Well, I know. But, you know, and here's the thing. Here's why they've lowered the voting age. You can... You know, people are going in the military, yeah, to go fight wars, and right, they can't vote for it.
Right.
That doesn't seem right. But also, going in the military, fighting wars, and you're saying, well, you know, go and relax, try to take care of yourself, but don't drink.
You know, it's a state law, the drinking age.
No, I didn't know that. It's probably federal funding tied to it.
Exactly. It's, yeah, federal funding tied to it. Federal funding to the highways, of all things.
Right, right.
So the state law, at least in Rhode Island, I can't, yeah, speak for the rest of the nation, but my father has told me this. When he turned 20... It was still 21, their drinking age.
Yeah.
When he turned 21, they moved it to 18.
Oh.
And then, because it was a big thing for him, like, I'm 21. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, now, wow, everybody can drink. But then, like, I think like a decade or two later.
They moved it back.
They moved it back because they said, we're going to take away your federal highway funding, yeah, if it's not at 21.
Right.
And so, at least in Rhode Island, that's why. But I don't know if that's true for the rest of the,
yeah,
the country. I'm not 100% sure because I wasn't alive then.
Right.
And I didn't do much research into the drinking age.
So, you know, so that question comes up with marijuana.
Right.
With the legality of it.
Right.
Because is smoking a little bit of marijuana a sin?
No, and so I wanted to show you what 20 grams of marijuana was. It's not a lot.
Yeah, before we were recording this, Josh said that you only need about 20 grams of marijuana.
20 milligrams, excuse me.
20 milligrams.
Yeah. 20 grams is a lot.
Okay.
20 milligrams.
And I quickly reminded him that this is America and we work with the imperial system here.
You know who doesn't work with the imperial system?
Who?
People who smoke marijuana.
They're all
in the grams.
Canadians and communists.
That's what it is.
That's what they are.
So 20 milligrams of marijuana contains 7 milligrams of THC. 7 milligrams is enough to inebriate you.
Okay.
And so is it a sin to take a puff?
No. That's what we're talking about, like one puff?
Yeah, no, it's not even like, I think it's about a half a joint.
Okay.
You know, so, or a quarter of a blunt, depending on how thick it's packed, or, you know, like 4 or 5 puffs from a pipe.
So not
the bong hit, it's a different issue. So
right, that's, right. So, but it's not a lot.
It's not a lot, but it's not like, it's not puff. That's it. Yeah. You know, it's not like a one puff. And you're not, if you're with somebody that takes one puff of a marijuana cigarette,
yeah,
for lack of a better term, if they take one puff of a joint and they're claiming they're high, you can slap them, you know, because they're not.
Right.
They're not.
In fact, we're telling you, if you see someone that takes one toke from a joint and says, dude, I'm so high, slap them.
Yes.
That's, you have our permission.
Right. Because they're not. They're just, it's impossible.
Just don't leave a mark.
But then beyond that, so, and here's where it comes into other issues, is beyond that,
mm-hmm,
when you get high,
yeah,
is it a sin? Here's the issue.
Yeah.
In the scriptures, there's nothing about marijuana.
I know.
And it's not that they didn't use marijuana. They did. The ancient, right, Greeks, going back to like 500 BC, you can see the Greeks were using it. And you can go back to like 800 BC and see the Egyptians were using it.
Right.
So in both of those two areas where the Christians did exist and where Judaism did exist,
mm-hmm,
and I only say the Greeks because the Seleucids would go into wherever. The Seleucids went into the Middle East and kind of took over there.
The Seleucid place.
Yeah. You know, the Middle East, where yeah, the Jews were in Jerusalem. And,
oh, okay. And so the Palestinian area.
Yeah, and beyond. Because,
yeah,
if you know the story of Alexander the Great takes over,
right,
the whole world.
Right.
He splits into 4 kingdoms. One of the kingdoms were the Seleucids.
Oh, okay.
So there was a Greek influence there. There was an Egyptian influence there because the Ptolemies eventually and the Seleucids would trade it back and forth, that Fertile Crescent there.
Right, right.
Which,
right,
is Palestine, the Jordan River, all that.
Yep.
And so there was definitely something there that they would have. Let me just make it like this. Paul would have known about marijuana. He would have known about cannabis.
Right, right.
The fact that he doesn't mention it says something to me. They're very clear about alcohol.
Right.
Now, the other issue, though, is that when you look at the ancient text and not the scriptures, folks, but like the historical text about marijuana. You go, there's a few different things you can look at. But if you look at these ancient history or historical writings of it, mainly medicine,
right?
It was a medicinal herb.
Okay.
And that was it. It wasn't this. It wasn't two guys getting together in their mother's basement smoking it. It was really a medicinal, complete medicinal.
Playing herb. The Grateful Dead.
Right.
Watching their lives waste away.
Right. Yeah. No.
Have their
dead.
Tie-dyed sheets hung up on the walls. I know.
Tie-dye tokas.
The lava lamp's on and right. sitting in their beanbag chairs.
Bringing me flashbacks.
Bag of Doritos
and some Mountain Dew playing Halo all night.
Okay, so.
But yeah, no, so the ancients, you know, the Greeks, the Egyptians, right. I would even say the Romans, I didn't find anything in the Romans, but the Romans adapted so much from the Greeks and the Egyptians,
they
especially.
They stole everything.
Everything.
They stole everything.
Everything that the Romans have, that contributed outside of organized military, which they stole from a different group. They stole really from
Rhodes,
the Etruscans.
Aqueducts, stole it all.
Everything stolen.
Their deities, stolen.
Stolen. Everything. Philosophies, stolen.
Togas.
Togas, definitely stolen.
Caesar, stolen.
Yeah. but, so, you know, these all these ancients used marijuana or cannabis as as an herb. It was a medicinal herb.
Right.
So it brings the question of what is, what's the biblical stance on it? There is none, because it was a medicinal herb.
Right.
So medicinally, 100%, I have no issue with it.
Okay.
I want to make that very clear before we get further beyond that. Medicinally, I have no issue with it. Especially if you can get it without the THC, which is possible. You know, they just have to, really, it's the cannabinoids around the cannabis that help you get better.
Okay.
Now, the THC, it's like.
That helps with the pain.
Well, the THC helps with the pain because it's like morphine. It gets you high.
Yeah, well, if you're
and morphine, I don't know a single Christian, so I just excluded all the Jehovah's Witnesses there, but I don't know a single Christian.
And the Christian scientists.
Yeah, and the who are neither Christian nor scientist.
You're right, I know. Mary Baker Eddy.
Oh, gosh.
What happened? Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, pride. So the medical marijuana, I don't know a single Christian who would say no to morphine.
Right.
Or no to, I know some that would say no to like, codeine or whatever because of drug pass. But for the most part, there's no Christian denomination that's out there like, oh, we're protesting codeine today.
Right.
Or we're protesting, you know, we're protesting the use of Vicodin today or whatever the case may be. And it's like, no, you're not gonna protest Vicodin or Percocets or morphine or whatever the case may be, or even chemotherapy or whatever.
Right.
Because these are medicines that work.
So it's not a sin to take those within the context, you know, the prescription.
Right.
Control,
and so I would say I would put the exact same thing on marijuana.
But let's say...
Just for the medical
stuff. Right, for the medical part.
So then to go back to the non-medical.
Right. I mean, let's say there's these two guys, devoted Christians, like to have a good time, you know, but, you know, they're decent. They're
going for my notes.
Okay. They're decent individuals, reasonable, and they just like to go in the basement and smoke a little weed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a sin?
Depends what state they're in right now.
Hmm. So, and that's where, and you're going back to the guy,
going back to
the
obey
rules,
the laws,
obey the laws,
obey the laws. I would argue it's not sinful, but it isn't an iniquity.
I love what you just did there.
If you, yeah,
you're trying to create a taxonomy of wrongdoings. That so some things are iniquitous and some things are sinful.
Right, and I think part of the, you know, so if it's somebody in Rhode Island, for example, doing that,
right,
because it's not legal here for recreational use,
right.
If we define sinful as being against God,
right,
I don't find the use of marijuana being against God, but it would be an iniquity and therefore a sin because it's going against the laws of the land,
right.
And then there's another issue where, like, even in Colorado, right, I have a buddy who lives in Colorado. Great guy, Christian. I don't know if he smoked. I've asked him, I jokingly, but he's never answered me seriously. But if he does, great, good for him, right?
Right.
If he smokes, he's still doing iniquity because it's still a federal
law. Oh, right.
And so that's where the other issue of states' rights versus federal rights come in, is another issue in itself. But two guys legally, let's say hypothetically, they're in Massachusetts smoking in their basement. I would ask them, I would do the Spurgeon challenge with them, which is, I don't know if you're, how familiar you are with Spurgeon's.
Is that when you fill up a bucket with Spurgeon's sermons and then dump them on your
yes, head? Yes, that's exactly it. It's like the ALS ice bucket challenge.
Just see if you don't fall unconscious, going, wow.
And so I know the Baptists hate Spurgeon, so.
Well, no, we don't.
There was so much from the 1800s against Spurgeon.
That doesn't mean we hate him now.
Right, right, sure. But Baptists hate Spurgeon, so I know you're not familiar with this guy, this Charles Spurgeon fella. But in all seriousness, Spurgeon, I don't know how familiar you are with like some of his personal stories, but one of my favorite personal stories is he would smoke a cigar every day.
Sure.
He would say, "You smoke for the glory of God." Well, that's okay, true
that's
or not.
That's interesting.
Yeah. He was, you know, he was Spurgeon. Anyways, there was one of his like servants, I think it was like Gardner or something, and he was smoking a pack of cigarettes. You know, I don't know if it was daily, but he'd smoke every day cigarettes.
Yeah.
He mocked Spurgeon, essentially. He said, "Well, you know, you're addicted to that cigar." And Spurgeon's like, "No, I'm not." "Yeah, you are." And Spurgeon's like, "Okay, how about this? We'll have a bet." And they had like a monetary bet. I forgot what the monetary bet was, which is another issue, is gambling illegal.
Yeah, right. Well,
That's a different podcast, I think.
Yeah.
But whether it's, so Spurgeon's like, "We'll have a monetary bet. And if I win, I pay you. And if you win, you pay me." And the bet was who could go longer without smoking.
Huh.
So I think it was like a week. Or I might be telling the story wrong here, but whatever the time frame was, there was a certain amount of time that passed, and it wasn't much. I think it was like a week, maybe 2 weeks. And the Gardener comes to Spurgeon, is like, "Please, please, sir, let me smoke my cigarettes again. I can't, you know, I can't pay you, I can't do this, just please show me grace, let me smoke again." And Spurgeon's like, "Okay." And for 4 months after that day, he didn't touch a cigar.
Wow.
And so I would ask the two gentlemen in the basement, "Could you do the Spurgeon challenge?"
Oh, could you?
How long could you go without that?
Right.
Because, and so smoking tobacco, not a sin, in my opinion. Okay, I enjoy the occasional cigar or whatever. But smoking to a point of an addiction becomes a sin. And so it's the same with marijuana use. Because the reality is, if you smoke tobacco, you get a buzz of a certain type. Right. That nicotine gives you a buzz. If you drink coffee, you get a buzz. I mean,
so because it becomes, then you run into the danger of idolization.
Yeah.
And then you're putting an idol before God.
Right.
If that practice gets in the way of your relationship with God.
Right.
So I still am at a place where I have to have a cup of coffee every day.
Right.
It's an addiction. It's a physical addiction. I don't think that desire, that addiction gets in the way of my relationship with God.
Right.
So I wouldn't call it a sin.
Right.
Now, if I started, if I drank so much coffee that I started stealing from my kids' savings accounts, I don't know how much coffee I need to drink to have that. There's a sin. But let's get back to the how we started the whole, or if I only drink coffee that was coated in gold, or that coffee that monkeys eat.
The monkey poop in
the
coffee.
The monkey poo coffee,
You know, then there would be something there. But even like, so I would say, yeah, it's not sin. It's not a sin, you know, obviously, to have a cup of coffee every day. But I would even say to you, could you do the Spurgeon challenge? Maybe not 4 months, but could you go a day?
If I had to, it wouldn't be fun.
Right.
It would get in the way of my relationship with God.
Because you would have the headache.
Yeah.
Know, right. There's a lot of
issues. And I'm not going to pray when I have a headache. I will not pray when I have a headache. I don't care.
No. I don't do much when I have headaches.
So So, I mean, let's get this back to the legalism versus antinomialism. I mean, the danger of the antinomialism, like the moral relativity, is you just say, anything goes.
Right, right.
Right? Toke it up.
Right.
Which I guess that's what the kids are saying today about the drugs, right?
Yeah, that's...
Toke it up.
Toke it up. That's what they... That's a new expression. you're on the cutting edge, buddy.
The drugs. When they're doing the drugs.
when they start ingesting the drugs, they toke it all up.
They say, hey, man, let's go toke it up.
Listen, I said marijuana cigarettes, so...
Marijuana cigarettes. If you're rolling a fatty every day and you're doing your wake and bake, there's something that's not good.
Right. Yeah. No. You're no one.
I just threw out some
language. You just threw some great modern day language in there. It was good.
Yeah.
No one makes pop brownies because it makes the pop brown or makes the brownie taste better.
They taste horrible unless you do it the right way.
Right. If you do it the right way.
So I hear.
Yeah.
But.
So no one's making pot brownies today because they're like, oh man, I'm getting this great chocolate.
It tastes amazing.
No, amazing. You know, you're doing it because you're getting baked. Literally.
Right, right. So there's a danger in saying do whatever you want. And we see this so well in 1 Corinthians.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe 2 Corinthians, but definitely 1 Corinthians when Paul's writing to him and saying, like, you got this guy sleeping with, what was it, his father's wife?
Yeah, it was his stepmother or something like that.
Yeah, something weird.
Was it his father's mother-in-law? I don't remember.
It was wrong.
It was wrong. Yeah. It was his father's something, and it was still wrong.
Yeah, and they're like, whoa, we're saved. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Right?
Right. So that becomes the danger of antinomianism. Not that people that are smoking pot are going to go start having incestuous affairs.
But this idea, I mean, it's... this is where I kind of fall, I struggle with it. So one of the podcasts I really enjoy listening to is John Hodgman's podcast.
Okay.
It's called Judge John Hodgman. He listens to people and having domestic abuse, domestic disagreements.
Okay.
You know, small things of like which way to hang the toilet paper, something like that. But one of his rules of thumb is you like what you like.
Yeah.
And that should be fine. And to a point, I agree with him. Right? You like what you like.
Yeah.
Right? Except when what you like hurts other people. Or when what you like gets in the way of your relationship with others.
Yeah.
Or what you like gets in the way of your relationship with God.
Yeah.
And this individualistic moral relativism is in its own way sinful. To say, look, and I'm just going to do what I want. And I'm going to have a good time. No one's getting hurt.
Right.
What's the big deal?
Well, by that logic, then I can go be baked because no one gets hurt if I'm in my house right now,
right,
smoking a doobie or whatever. You know, if I make my pop smoking a doobie. I told somebody I'd throw that out there today, so I'm glad.
Wow,
I did.
Wow.
But no one's getting hurt.
Wait. The phone's ringing. It's the 1970s. Yeah.
You know, if I'm getting lit at home, no one gets hurt. You know, right. If I'm stoned at home, no one gets hurt.
Are you saying YOLO every time after you?
Yeah, I'll get that old glass pipe. YOLO! Every single time.
One of the most obnoxious phrases.
It is.
It really is awful.
No one gets hurt, for the most part.
Right.
But am I hurting my relationship with others? Because now, for the however long that high lasts, I'm not exactly functional.
Yeah.
Am I hurting my relationship with God?
Yeah.
Because in that time, this is going to sound real legalistic, but whatever. In that time I was getting baked, I could have been in prayer.
You could have been in prayer.
You know.
Now, some people say marijuana helps their prayer.
Whether that's true or not is another issue.
Yeah, the studies are still out.
Yeah. Am I hurting myself? No, probably not. But that argument can be brought into other things.
Right.
Pornography. If I'm watching pornography, who am I hurting?
Right. Well, that...
In my home, by myself, you know, whatever.
And you know what?
I mean, in reality, by myself, I'm not. Mentally. So
that's really an interesting point, though. You're hurting the people who are relying on that industry.
Yes. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. It adds up because now I'm hurting the porn stars because now the reality is not every porn star wants to be in porn. A lot of it's human trafficking related.
Right. And you're objectifying them.
Right. I've cheated on my wife essentially because I've lusted after a woman. There's other issues there too that are beyond just
marijuana. And you can even say so with marijuana because it's still illegal and part of a drug, the whole larger drug empire.
Right.
There are sins that are involved in the production and manufacturing of marijuana. Unless it's state run.
Yeah.
You know, so all right, so the antinomianism has its problems.
Yeah, huge problems. Do whatever you want. Huge, because of the fact that it literally stops people.
So on the other hand, let's go right to the legalism. This approach that if alcohol touches your lips, if you even listen to a Fish song,
that's a double sin. That's marijuana and secular music.
Right? Right? Not that all Fish music is related to marijuana, but come on. How else can you sit? How can you sit through those long jams?
That's like saying, not all Grateful Dead music is related to marijuana.
This is the only way those dancing bears make sense, to be honest. You're like, why are the bears dancing? Why are they so happy and why aren't they wearing pants?
Marijuana use.
Well, marijuana use at least helps.
Smoking doobies with those marijuana cigarettes.
When one tokes a doobie, then those questions feel profound. If you're sober, the questions feel silly.
Right, exactly, exactly.
So, you know, so to say, you know, to go so far as to say touching it is a sin, having it in the household is a sin.
Because then, again, so even if you're just against recreational use.
Right.
Okay, fine. If you're against recreational use, there might be reasons why. Great, fine. But if you're against recreational use and you say touching it's a sin, well, now all those medicinal people,
right?
Now they have to choose: do I go to hell and suffer, you know, for eternity,
right?
because I'm better for a few months or 6 years or whatever the case may be. You know, marijuana, medicinal marijuana can do a lot of help.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Or do I suffer for the next 6 months on earth and then go to heaven because, you know, my church told me touching weed is bad.
Right.
Which, you know, so that's the issue with legalism. And that goes into other things, too.
Hey, yeah, you could apply this to dancing.
Yep.
To card playing.
Yep. I'd be going right to hell for card playing.
You're a shark? Are you a card? Are you a...
Well, you know my obsession with board games.
Oh, that's right.
Right. So that birthed it out of poker.
Oh.
So to give a little background.
I think most board games are okay, but Magic the Gathering is still out.
Right. Magic's still out, and then some aspects of some games in the evangelical circle still out.
How about Settlers of Catan? Is that
Settlers of Catan is okay because there's no evil.
I'm sure there's an evangelical Christian version of that where it's actually Evangelicals of Catan where you're spreading the gospel.
There's Settlers of Canaan.
Oh my gosh.
That was actually made by the guys who made Catan, though. It's not for evangelicals.
Okay.
Or it might be, I don't know, but it's not done by them.
So there's a danger because that legalism breaks relationships with other people.
It breaks relationships with other people, and I think it breaks relationships with God.
Yeah,
I would even go as that far. Now, if it's a personal standard that you hold yourself that you want to have,
right.
Great.
That's again getting back to you like what you like.
Right, you like what you like, and you don't like what you don't like, and maybe you have issues. My I know people who have real serious issues with drugs or alcohol, whatever. You know, if you're an alcoholic, yes, stay away from alcohol.
Right.
And you know what? Preach the evils of alcohol.
Yeah.
Show that alcohol can be evil.
Yeah.
Because there's so many needs to hear that.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, don't sit there and ban alcohol for everybody because you had a bad experience.
Right. And if you're having someone over for dinner.
Yeah. And they're an alcoholic.
First, that's cannibalism. Don't do that.
Yeah, don't. But don't eat them.
If you've invited someone to join you for dinner.
Good English.
and you know they're an alcoholic. Be sensitive towards that.
Right. Well, that's... I wanted to bring this scripture up was Paul...
The stumbling block.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the stumbling block, but Paul with... Paul with Peter.
Okay, yeah.
You know, Peter, like, he's okay with eating meats,
right.
You know, with the
Romans?
Yeah,
the Gentiles.
The Gentiles is the word I was looking for. He's okay with eating meats with Gentiles, but he's not okay with eating meats with the Jews because... Not because it's a stumbling block... But because he wants to make this appearance of holiness.
Right, right.
And so don't go to the other end of it, too, where you're like, well, you know, with my, you know, my evangelical friends, I'm going to pretend I'm against alcohol.
I'm going to listen to K-Love all the time when you're in the car with
you. K-Love and Welch's at the community. Right. No, you know, be who you are as well.
Right.
If it's not an issue, if it's not a stumbling block.
Right.
If it is a stumbling block, is that your scripture today, by the way?
No,
I okay, good. So I can talk more about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So the with when it is a stumbling block, absolutely, like you said, don't even make that appearance. Like I know there's people that have come over my house for dinner or just to hang out. You know what? And I have two fridges. I have a large like fridge you have, right?
Yep.
And then I have a little wine fridge.
Oh, nice.
The wine fridge is hidden. That's where all the alcohol goes.
You have a little speakeasy going on.
Yeah, I have
house.
A little speakeasy next to the couch. but it's hidden, not out of shame,
right,
because it's
right.
still in the open.
Yeah.
It's hidden in the sense that if you're not looking for it, you won't see it.
Right.
Because it just kind of blends in with the rest of the room. But if you are looking for it, like everybody that drinks beer at my house knows where it is.
Okay.
So they just go to it, they grab a beer, whatever. And it's great for like football games or whatever because it's right there.
Yeah.
But like other people who have an issue with it.
They don't have to worry about it.
They don't have to worry about it because it's out of sight. I'm not sitting there. And while they're over, I'm not sitting there like, here's a Coors Light.
No, yeah.
I don't drink that.
Well, first of all, yeah, that's a sin.
Coors Light is just really cold water.
Miller High Life.
Miller, a buddy of mine was like, have you had Miller High Life lately? And I'm like, no. And he's
Why?
Like, it's a great cheap beer. And I'm like, no.
That's a lot of self-loathing.
I'm like, no.
That's a lot of self-loathing.
I'm like, no, I will not touch that.
But here's the thing I tell people. So first, if it gets in the way of relationships.
Yeah, with other people.
With other people and with God. Especially with God, because there's some people say, "Look, I really would like you to. I'd like to enjoy this glass of wine with you, but if you're at this place where you're saying, for various reasons, I'm not drinking right now, then you need to ask. They should respect that out of you. So don't feel like, well, they've invited, offered, so I have to take it.
Right,
right. So, but here's the thing: if you're under 21, it's just not worth it.
No,
just don't drink.
Yeah.
I mean, the repercussions are too big. I mean, if you're with your parents and they offer, that's fine. But overall, and that's the, I would use the same rule of thumb right now for marijuana.
Yeah.
You know, if it's illegal, if you don't need it for medicinal uses, just don't do it.
Yeah, there's no.
It's just, it's not worth it. It's not worth the headache if you get caught, if you get arrested and stuff like that. But is it a sin? No. That's
like I said, it would be an iniquity.
An iniquity.
Because you're breaking the law.
All right, so, folks, I hope this was a good case study, I think, for just that the legalistic...
Good discussion.
Yeah.
We can do a case study. We can go...
Well, we use marijuana as a case study.
You know, we can do a physical case study, go get some marijuana and try it out. In Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts.
Not in Rhode Island.
No.
If my wife's listening, I didn't do that.
All right, good. Good conversation. Sorry, something in my throat just needs to stop. No, I'm only kidding. Don't do drugs. Drugs are bad. Okay, covered that. Good. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I hope you enjoyed the playing with the idea of what does it mean to be to sin and what does it mean to be overly legalistic, that kind of thing. And please remember to resubscribe to the new 12 Enough with a capital T and a capital E. I had to spend extra money for those bigger font letters. And then please go and rate that show and put a little comments on iTunes because that we're starting from scratch. And I hope you enjoyed this show. If you want to send a comment about this show or any other shows, that email stays the same. That's 12enough@gmail.com. 12enough@gmail.com. You can also go to the Facebooks where you can leave comments on the show, on shows, or see other things that are happening. You can go to the website itself, 12enough.com, where I have all of these shows, all the show notes, plus the blog. Plus, I'm going to be posting about my upcoming sabbatical. Ooh, exciting, isn't it? And so you can check that out, 12enough.com. And again, don't forget, change your subscription, 12 Enough, capital T, capital E, and do all the necessary things you need to do there. And as always, thank you very much for listening. 12 Enough is a podcast about Christian faith and culture in the modern age. Your hosts were Jonathan Malone, the pastor of the First Baptist Church of East Greenwich, Rhode Island, and Josh Mancini, the pastor of the Church of the City in Providence, Rhode Island. The thoughts, ideas, opinions, notions, ruminations, horrible drug jokes. I can't even say it. They were so bad. And everything else that happened on this podcast do not reflect their families, their churches, their denominations, other companies they may be related to, or anything else for that matter. These are their own ideas. This is their podcast.